So are you dreaming of a warm vacation during this latest Arctic blast? Join the club and stay tuned for some tips on traveling affordably during this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Financial planner and smart travel expert Kevin McKinley is in with information and advice on your personal finances and on saving money during travel. And we welcome your questions and suggestions, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Again, we will talk about traveling smartly and affordably, but we will also welcome any other questions you might have regarding your personal finances. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He joins us from our studios in Eau Claire, I hope. Hello, Kevin.
Yes.
Kevin, you are sound like you're far away, so I'll have to try this other connection and try this. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
All right, there we go. All right, I'm glad to have made our connection. I know we are devoting some of our time this month to things that we can do to make us happier in the new year. And we'll spend a lot of today's show on one of the best ways that we can spend our money, at least I think so, travel.
You are a huge aficionado. I know I'm preaching to the choir right now, Joy, by telling you that it's a good idea to take trips when you can and have the time off. But I think that our listeners, those in the great state of Wisconsin and beyond, sitting there with 10 below temperatures right now and trying to get their cars warmed up, can say, yeah, I might want to take a trip as well. A study from the Journal of Applied Research in Quality of Life found that in terms of planning a vacation, respondents received a huge boost in happiness over planning the trip, and especially starting 8 weeks out from their actual trip. So if you get a boost in happiness for 2 months in advance of the trip, and we've talked about several studies here where it's been a proven fact that generally people get much more happiness spent on travel and experiences than they do on stuff. But there are lots of objections and obstacles to taking those trips, so we're going to talk about how to pay for the trip and how to get a more affordable vacation and prevent some of the negatives from costing you lots of money and ruining your trip.
So are people willing to spend more money on trips now that the economy has improved somewhat?
Yes, they are. There was a 2009, there was a big dip, especially domestically in terms of the amount of travel, about a 10% drop in the dollars spent, but that's come back quite a bit, and now it's increasing at about a 4-5% per year. That's the amount of money that Americans spend traveling domestically each year, and the U.S. Travel Association says that people spend about $2,000 per person on travel in America every year and about $350 per person when traveling abroad every single year.
So what are some of the reasons people say they don't travel as much as they could or should?
Well, it's besides the cost. It's obviously the time, especially people who are working. Americans typically get on average about 14 days of paid vacation, but they only take about 10 of those. And that means that 500 million days of paid vacation go unused in America every single year. Then, of course, there is the time. Not only are you going to be gone and the work's going to pile up, but then you have to recover from that and catch back. There's the hassle. Some of the security issues of traveling are still prevalent on people's minds when they're deciding to take a trip. Many people would like to travel, but they don't have a person who can go with them or wants to. And then other people are just waiting because they say, well, there'll be a better time in the future. I'll have more money or I'll have more time.
And what do you say to those who are using those excuses?
Well, first of all, if you are a worker and you're worried about work being on your mind, about 90% of respondents to a Hotwire survey said that as soon as they get on the trip, they're able to leave work behind and forget about it. And several surveys have found that workers become more productive after their vacation than they were before they left. Now, usually that's because they're scrambling so much to get all the work caught up with. But if you can't go, you can't go. But there are lots of ways to save. And if you don't like the hassle of planning the trip, travel agents still do exist. You don't have to do it all yourself. And they're more than happy to book trips for you after they find out what you want. Sometimes they can even get you better deals than you can get on your own. We're going to talk about a couple ways to find traveling companions if you are a solo traveler and want to go with someone else. And quite frankly, if you're not going to travel now, when are you going to do it? And especially when it comes to special circumstances, like if you're going on a trip for a wedding or for a family reunion, or sometimes people are hesitant. They have, you know, I get a lot of stories of people say, well, my daughter is studying overseas right now. I'd love to go visit her, but geez, it's so much money and we're so busy. But she's not going to be studying overseas, hopefully, and probably very often. So you got to take that opportunity to take that trip and see that family member or friend in a specific circumstance while you can.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, if you have a question for Kevin, our number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is a travel edition of On Your Money, but we certainly welcome your money-related questions of any sort, personal finance questions of any sort. On Your Money, here on the Ideas Network. This is the On Your Money email bag, and we're going to talk a little bit about the emails that we get, questions we get all the time about trip insurance and whether or not you think it's a good idea for would-be travelers to consider purchasing trip insurance. What do you think, Kevin?
Well, I think it's definitely something to consider, and there's a reason for this, and people always send this email or call with this question right in advance of the trip. And I think part of the reason is because there's anxiety about the logistics and if everything's going to go okay. And then, gosh, it's all this money that we're spending. And I've heard stories of people getting sick or whatever. 1 in 5 travelers typically purchase some kind of a policy. And I actually think, like a lot of insurance, it's actually not a bad idea. If it makes you feel better to purchase it, then perhaps you should go ahead and buy it.
So how do these policies usually work?
There's several types of, there's some basic trip cancellation policies, which you purchase the policy, and then if for whatever reason or reasons within certain guidelines within the policy, you cannot make it, you can cancel the trip, and often you can get a refund for some or all of the money that you've laid out for it. This is an especially good idea if you're a bargain shopper and you're looking around for a trip that has non-cancelable, non-refundable airline tickets or hotel rooms or car rental or whatever. There are also ones for medical care, and a lot of times people, especially if you're traveling to a place that doesn't have the standard of medical care that you would normally like, you might want to buy this policy so that you can not only pay for care if you do need it there someplace else to get transferred on or to get brought back to the United States, because as anyone knows who's gone through this, that can be very, very expensive. It'd be tens of thousands of dollars to get an ailing person back into the country and give them the proper care during the trip. And then finally, there are policies that are kind of like, you know, the AAA policies for on the road, where they'll just give you assistance. So if there is any problem whatsoever, they'll have almost a concierge at your service who can help you clear up any difficulties along the way.
How much does it cost usually to buy one of these policies?
It depends on the type of the trip and the type of insurance, how comprehensive it is. And then in terms of the health insurance and the medical insurance, it depends on the age and the medical condition of the travelers, but usually it's about 5 to 10% of the trip cost. So if you're traveling and you're planning on spending, let's say, $2,000 on a trip, you might spend $150 to $200 extra to get some kind of trip insurance to serve you while you're on vacation or on the road.
And where do you usually get a policy?
You actually might not need to buy a new one. Check the terms of your auto insurance or homeowner's insurance or even your health insurance to see if it's possible to get the care or the coverage that you might be looking for on your own policy that you already have, or if it's possible to purchase an extra rider on there. Same thing goes for a credit card. A lot of times credit card companies have a provision in the terms where if you use that particular credit card to pay for something and something goes wrong, you can cancel it without any extra charge or maybe a nominal fee. They'll reimburse you for that or give you a new voucher where you can travel again in the future. And sometimes tours that book people on group tours, they offer insurance as well to you directly there. But if you want to buy it yourself, you can go to three different websites, insureandgo.com, travelguard.com, and insuremytrip.com. And we're going to be talking about a lot of websites today, and we'll put all of those up at onyourmoney.com as well.
Be sure to look at the fine print, though, on these travel insurance policies, Kevin. I think I told you once before, I was looking over a policy before a trip, and the nerve of these people, they said, if I injured myself skydiving, that it didn't apply.
So if you don't pack your parachute and you jump out of a plane and splat at 12,000 feet, they're not going to pay for that. Well, that doesn't seem worth the profit.
Right. My tough luck if that happens. We're talking with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. We're talking about ways to travel affordably, and we're welcoming your questions about that. We're also welcoming any personal finance questions you might have at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sharon in Greenfield is with us. Hello, Sharon.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Sharon.
First of all, I will cover that I've been listening to your show for a while, and I actually take notes. And 1 week you talked about like asking for help and how for some people that's hard because we're an independent nation. Mm-hmm. And that helped me to understand why my mom tends not to pay as much for services and things like that. She tends to lean on family members or, you know, searches for the lowest cost. So that was helpful for me. I liked those insights. Mm-hmm. So here goes. I have two different kinds of questions. One of them is my husband and I have two adult children. That's just two sons, but they're both out of state. And a few years ago, we started like a once in 5 years trip with them, and in a way, it's a sort of reunion. However, the first two, they were younger, and we were in a position to pay for the whole thing, basically. Well, now we're coming up on, you know, the fifth year. That's next year. And we'd like to change the scenario some and find something affordable that our sons can pay mostly for themselves and yet both generations can enjoy.
Sharon, did you say this is your 50th anniversary coming up?
No. I didn't say 50th anniversary. I said, see, in 2005, we went together for a week to Hawaii. And in 2010, we went to Alaska. And we were in the position to be able to pay for the vacation for our sons because they were younger and didn't have stable jobs or enough savings. Now, with 2015 next year, it's like, okay, are we going to do something together? It doesn't have to be in 2015. And we'd like to...
Okay, I just misunderstood. I thought that that you should have them pay for it all if it was your 50th wedding anniversary.
No. No, they pay for their portion.
Yeah, I get
it. They pay for their portion.
Yeah,
okay.
We get it, sure. So, Kevin.
Well, one thing I would do is, and this is tough to do, and I've been a part of this on all sides of the equation, but it's tricky sometimes when you're trying to get these children who you bore and raised to spend time with you as adults and to choose to do it rather than to feel do it out of an obligation. And so if you're in that situation, congratulations if you can get them to say, no, I really want to spend time with you, Mom and Dad, and I'm willing to pay for it. Sometimes the best you can hope for is to say, no, we want to see them. What's important, we want them to come, so we pay for everything. One thing I would recommend is talk with them and see what they would like to do. Have them plan the trip out and have them understand that you'd like them to pay for their portion of the trip. And the downside of that, of course, means that you might not get everything you want out of the trip, but it means that it's more affordable to you, and they hopefully have more vested in it because they're paying for it. And if they plan both the location and the activities and the timing of it, and with the assumption that they're going to be paying for it, then they won't feel like this is just being foisted on them and that they want to pay for, that they have to come up with money for something that they don't necessarily want to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you said you had another issue, Sharon?
Yes, I have another question. I may have missed something, Kevin and Joy. I heard earlier shows on Tuesday mornings at this time, and I thought that at one of these you were going, and I thought it was this one, you were going to talk about how to be grateful for what you have.
Oh, that's next week.
Is it really, Kevin?
It really is.
Okay, so it's going to be, we'll talk about gratefulness.
Gratitude
coming up next week, Sharon. Thanks very much for the call. We are talking with financial planner Kevin McKinley. He has some tips on traveling affordably, and we are welcoming your questions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a travel edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with financial planner and smart travel expert Kevin McKinley, who has some information and advice on your personal finances and saving money on travel. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our next caller is Joe in Plaine. Hello, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question. I've been listening, and I took your advice, Kevin, and went and got a home equity line of credit established. Even though we have a very modest home loan and we have a significant amount of money in savings, my question for you is things like vacations or home remodeling projects, when they do come up, is it better then to go ahead and use the home equity line of credit money and pay that low interest rate and pay it off slowly for those things like remodeling or vacation, or is it better to just go ahead and use the money, that the cash that you have on hand, even though it's your savings and it's that sort of rainy day fund for 6 months if you lost your job and that sort of thing? I'm just trying to decide, should we be paying it off as we go since we have the money, or should we draw down that home equity line of credit and use that and pay interest?
Philosophically, and you sound like the kind of person, the people I worry about borrowing money to go on a trip are the people where that's the only asset they have, and where they have no other, you know, funds, or the only source of funds is to borrow or to put it all on a credit card, and they're just going to, you know, hopefully go on this great trip and then have $10,000 of debt to pay off at a higher interest rate. You don't sound like that kind of person, Joe, and so I'm going to say that it is okay to pay cash for the trip. When it comes to the financing of the home improvements, that's an ideal reason to tap that home equity line of credit, and in part because it you are adding to the equity of the home and borrowing from the equity that you previously established to pay for that addition to the equity. Now, you don't get a dollar-for-dollar return usually on money put in on remodeling, but it might be 50 cents on the dollar, it might be 70 cents on the dollar, and best of all, you get the enjoyment of whatever you're doing, a nicer kitchen or an extra bathroom or a finished basement, and so it's a very wise use of that home equity line of credit. And then if you just find that, you know, this cash just keeps building up and you're in the very fortunate position of having just too much liquid assets and you don't like the interest rate and the interest that you're paying, then go ahead and pay it down. But otherwise, I'd prefer that you use cash for the trips. And if you are going to tap the home equity line of credit, home improvement is a great reason to do so.
Thanks, Joe, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Our number is 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Marcia emails, a fun and easy way to save money while traveling is to find a grocery store and buy the ingredients for a picnic. When I was in Europe, nothing was more fun to me than finding a local's grocery store, seeing what the locals are buying and eating, and finding a charming or bustling place to eat my culinary treasures. Nice. This method is so much cheaper than restaurant meals, no matter where you are. Sounds good to me, Kevin.
I agree completely. As much as I enjoy dining out, one of the best ways to save money at any time, but especially on vacation, is to buy groceries and prepare the food yourself rather than eating out. And plus, you won't get that strange situation where sometimes I go away on vacation and I find that, I don't know if it's the atmospheric pressure where I've been or whatever, but all the clothes seem to have shrunk while I was on the trip.
I hate when that happens.
I know.
Yeah. Let's take another call from Lynn in Green Bay. Hello, Lynn. Hello, Lynn. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. I had a question. Long-time listener and first-time caller, but I had a question about my son's in college, his second year, and I have a daughter that'll be in college this coming fall, and they both have stock, and I'm wondering if I should sell the stock and put it in a Roth IRA for them. And the stock's in their name.
The stock is in their name. Well, first of all, I prefer to answer questions from long-time listeners and first-time callers rather than first-time listeners and long-time callers. There's people who don't listen to the show and just call in. This isn't a helpline, people. Come on. And you're doing this probably in part because of, to help qualify for more financial aid, ideally?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any chance that you might actually need to use this money?
No, my thought was that they would save it until after they graduate, and then if they don't get a job right away, they could use that to help pay off their student loans.
Okay, speaking of jobs, do they actually have earned income on which to base the contribution to the Roth IRA?
One does. The other one just has a part-time nursery job at church.
Okay, but they do actually have earnings, okay? So you can do
yes.
This. You can make a contribution to a Roth IRA for them, and you can actually sell the stock. The bad news is you do actually have to sell the stock, and you have to, because you can only put cash into an IRA or Roth IRA. You can't transfer security into it. The good news is it may actually shelter some of the assets from the federal financial aid formula. The bad news is that it will probably not shelter it from the institutional method, and this is what a lot of individual schools use to calculate above and beyond the federal formula how much the expected family contribution should be, the EFC, if you will. And the other bad news about that is that any financial aid is going to, especially if they go to a state school, is likely to be loans, not just grants for the heck of it. Are they thinking of going to like a public institution or a private institution?
Yep, they're both going to UW schools.
Okay, that's great. That's still one of the best values in education for University of Wisconsin, any of the system schools for state residents, still one of the best values in public education out there, so good for them. I would say that you could do this if you wanted to. I think it's a great idea to have the Roth IRA. I don't think it's going to provide you a huge difference or a measurable difference in the amount of financial aid, because all you can really put into that Roth IRA is the amount of their earnings in a given year or $5,500, the lesser of the two. So you're not going to shelter a huge amount of money for it, but it can be a good idea. And not only that, you might want to, I assume the stocks have probably gone up quite a bit in price recently, right?
Yeah, they've got about between $3,000 and $4,000, I would say, and I would make sure that whatever they sold was more than a year old, because
yep.
They get stocks every year for Christmas.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I would consider doing that and getting it in the Roth IRA. It's a nice demonstration of why you want to start saving for retirement. We're going to cover that in a few weeks here as well about putting money into a Roth IRA for a younger person. But I think that would be a good idea, not so much for the financial aid, but just for the philosophical advantages.
All right, Lynn. Thanks very much. Good luck, and I hope you turn into a longtime caller. That would be great. Jim in Babcock is with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I have a question on eliminating mortgage insurance from our payments. Back in April, my wife and I bought our first house, and we put down about 10% at the time as all the liquid assets we had. In about a year, I'll be retiring, and I'll have additional funds that currently aren't available. They're in a deferred comp type setup. And so I'll have enough money at that point to pay down the 20% to eliminate the mortgage insurance. And I'm wondering, is it a good idea to take, it probably be about $20,000, to take that out of that deferred comp in a lump sum, which would be subject to taxes, and pay off that, to eliminate that mortgage insurance, and it's like $180 a month, I believe, is the insurance. Or just leave that money in there and continue to pay our mortgage down at we have a 3.75 interest rate. I don't know, which would be, in your opinion, a better way to go? Pay it off or just leave it, pay it off slowly until it's gone?
I'm sorry, when did you say you're going to be able to get access to those funds, Jim?
Next November, late or December.
Okay, here's how I would do this, assuming that you can do this. First of all, check with the lender, because sometimes just adding that money to the mortgage might not be enough to do it. You have to contact them and make sure that, hey, I want to make sure that when I do pay this down, that I will have established enough equity so I can eliminate this private mortgage insurance. Because remember, the private mortgage insurance is not for your benefit. Well, it is to some extent, but it's more so for the lender's benefit. So they want to have that in place as much as possible. So contact the lender first and say, if I indeed do this, is this enough money to eliminate the private mortgage insurance payment? And then once you do that, what I'd like to see you do in this situation is actually just take $10,000 out in 2014, right at the end of the year, right? And then after the first of the year in January of 2015, that's when you want to take the next $10,000 out, for a couple of reasons, one of which is by taking out less over, spreading the payments out over 2 years, you'll probably be in a lower income tax bracket. And you may just want to wait until after January 1st of 2014, because by definition, you're going to be retired, correct?
Yeah, right.
In 2015. And you'll probably be in a lower income tax bracket, so that when you pull that money out of this, it's a tax-deferred account, I'm assuming, correct?
Right. Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. When you pull it out, it'll be taxed as ordinary income. And if you can push as much of that income as possible out into 2015, it will likely be taxed at a lower rate. Whereas if you take anything out in 2014, that will be added on top of the earnings that you already have this year and likely taxed at a higher rate. And it'll make much better sense to do it after the first of the year rather than this year.
So, okay, that makes sense. So take, if I retire in December of 2014, don't do it then, but wait till January and do $10,000 then, or $10,000.
Yeah, if you have to do it this year, and you just say I can't stand it, then split it up. But if you can kick the can down the road a few weeks until after the first of the year in 2015, I'd rather have you take it all out then and do it that year.
Good luck, Jim. I'm Joy Cardine with certified financial planner Kevin McKinley during this edition of On Your Money. It's a travel edition of On Your Money, but we are taking your calls and questions on any personal finance issue at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin, you mentioned that the cost of taking a trip was one of the obstacles that people cite when deciding to delay or avoid taking a trip. What are some ways that we can make the whole process more affordable?
Well, one of the exercises that I think is valuable, if people say, I'd like to take a trip, but I just don't think I can afford to do it right now, sometimes that's just the case, and that's an easily avoidable expenditure. So I get that, and a good way to cut back. But one of our favorite exercises here at On Your Money is for people to analyze their spending and see where it's all going, and for several reasons, one of which is so that you can look at that and say, all right, I'm spending $4,000 a month, and there's a line-by-line item of where it's all going. Would going on a trip make me happier than what this particular expenditure is doing? Let's say it's a cell phone bill or a cable package or something, or you're buying lots of books. Would it maybe be better to scale back on that area and instead save money for traveling? Let's say you're going to spend about $1,500 on a trip, and you're going once per year. Well, if you can save $30 a week or about $3 or $4 a day, that should cover that over 1 year, and then you can start saving up for the next year afterwards and help you kind of prioritize. So you might answer and say, you know what, there's nothing else I can cut out in my life that that would give me less pleasure than taking a trip, therefore I'm not going to take the trip. But if the opposite is true, now's the time to cut back.
What if I just want to put that trip on my credit card?
That actually can be a great idea. If you have one of those travel or rewards cards and you're spending, doing your normal spending with that just to accumulate points or rewards or whatever, as long as you weigh the annual fees out of the card, and most importantly, of course, is to pay off the balance. Don't just, you know, charge up a bunch of stuff to get the points, because the interest cost will easily exceed any benefit you get from those free points or rewards. And then also check the terms of those points or the miles or whatever. It's getting harder and harder to use those because airlines and hotels and other travel companies are getting much better at maximizing their revenue. And one of the great ways to do that is to squeeze the people trying to use, you know, free services from it. So check with your current card to see if you can get on some kind of travel or reward program, or you can go to creditcards.com/reward, and they have a really nice rundown of all of the credit cards that may give you the best miles or points for traveling.
I am going to check that out, but my testimonial on this is that I did just book a trip using credit card rewards, and it was wonderful. I have not been using my rewards, and I had plenty to use, and I got a free trip to Tampa and back in a car rental for a week. So I'm very thrilled with that. But that was one credit card. Another credit card was going to send me all over the world to get to my destination at a terrible time. So you really, you know, have different experiences with different cards. So what are some of the standard ways to save while on a trip?
Well, obviously, don't go when and where everyone else is going. Try to avoid, you know, the Thanksgiving through December traveling. People really knock themselves out to travel during the holidays to see family, and I get it because it is the holidays, and because sometimes that's the only time you can get away to do it. But if you can avoid traveling during those times and during spring break and during the other bigger holidays like Memorial Day and Labor Day, you can save lots of money. So be kind of a contrarian, and then go colder places in the wintertime and warmer places in the summertime, or even at the beginning, at the end of the season. They call it, you know, the shoulder periods, kind of where things aren't quite as nice as they will be in the peak periods, but things can be a lot cheaper. And if you're not worried about the weather and you go in the off season, you can usually save about 50% on hotel costs and 25% to 50% on airfare costs over traveling to the same place during the peak time of the year.
Any other tips to make travel more affordable?
Absolutely. Make sure you get your discounts. If you're over 50, join AARP for $10 a year, whatever it is. It's a fantastic way to not only get information on trips, but to get discounts at several places. Sign up at every single airline that you possibly can for their newsletter, and if they have a free membership club or whatever that you can get miles. Same thing with car rentals and hotel chains. Sign up for all of their different programs for it, because not only will it, you can accumulate miles for it, but they'll put you on an email list and they'll send you alerts when they have excess capacity and that they're looking to try to get rid of. And sometimes that can be the impetus to say, "Ooh, I've always wanted to go there. The airfare now is really cheap. I'm going to take advantage of this special deal."
Let's take a call from Marie in Waukesha. Hi, Marie.
Good morning. I have a question about affordable travel. My husband and I are in our 60s and retired, and he has a sister who's single. She's always been single, and she's also retired. And we were thinking, we found out we want to go to some of the same places, and we were thinking of going together and perhaps like renting a condo in Florida for a month next winter or something like that, or even taking some road trips. How do we divide the cost? Like, for instance, a condo, do we pay two-thirds and she pays one-third, or do we split it in half, or the same with the gasoline? What would you recommend?
I
don't want to sound cheap.
No, you just want to be fair, right?
Yeah.
Well, what I would do is just add up the total cost and then flip a coin, and whoever loses pays for the entire thing. That's a fair way to go. No, I think that it's probably a case of, like, a lot of relationships where it's really only fair if both of you feels like you're contributing a little bit too much. And so I'd say that just plan on, you know, overemphasizing for it. But maybe, you know, if you go in a condo, you can charge by the bedroom, Or you can say, well, tell you what, let's do this rather than going 50-50, let's go a third, two-thirds. And by person is usually a better way to pay for things rather than doing it, 50-50 between couple. And especially because it's a case where it's nice for her because she gets some travel companions for her too, but I think that you can do some more things, probably get a nicer, bigger condo than you otherwise would because you have her kicking in some money for it as well. So I would say just divide up the expenses of the fixed expenses such as the condo by person, and then everything else you can just kind of pay for as you see fit. And to be quite frankly, if a few $50 or $100 is going to be an issue of contention between the three of you, you probably shouldn't be traveling together anyway.
Marie, have fun. Thanks for the call. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner and Managing Member of McKinley Money, LLC, talking about ways to save money or to travel affordably and any other personal finance questions that you might have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is a travel edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Certified Financial Planner Kevin McKinley. And now that we've discussed some of the benefits of travel and some of the basics of saving while traveling, let's talk Kevin, about some unconventional travel tips.
Well, Marie, the previous caller, brought up a great point and one of my favorite ways to save money, especially if you have some flexibility. It's some extra time to stay longer than you normally would, weeks or even months, if it's possible, if you're retired. The nice thing about it is that you can take the entire time that you need. If you can find a place like the condo in Florida that Marie spoke of, you get to go to this place. You get to drive your own car, so you don't have to rent a car. You have a car there. You don't have to pay for airfare. You can take your time, and then you can use that location as kind of a hub and then spoke out, for little day trips in any direction or whatever. And especially even if you're going internationally, if you can spend more time in one place, the total cost of the travel, which is typically a very big percentage of the trip cost, it diminishes because you're spending more during the time. So getting there and getting back is a smaller portion of the cost. It allows you to get comfortable with it, and one of the best places to find a longer-term place to stay, either domestically or overseas, is VRBO. That's Vacation Rental by Owner, VRBO.com. And then there are also some other places you can look at, like Airbnb is a newer, little edgier site. Another place you can look at is HomeExchange.com. That'll allow you to put your home up for use for other people while you're not there, but then you can use their home as well. HomeLink.org. And then finally, there are lots of different places around the country and around the world where they're looking for people to actually live in places while it's not being used, and it allows you to not only experience an area for a long time, but also serve as a caretaker and maybe even get paid for it. And that's at caretaker.org.
Marie also reminded me that sometimes it's more expensive to travel as a single person. You see, based on double occupancy or some sort of penalty if you're traveling alone. Anything you might recommend for the single traveler?
Absolutely. There are several sites out there that you can use to try to find a travel companion and find someone of like mind and interest who is compatible with you. And another thing that I've heard several people do in the past is where they've taken a group tour, and on this tour they've gone as a single, but they've met different people and said, oh, I met them on this trip, and they said, let's just us take a trip by ourselves because I've gotten to know you, we get along, and you have similar interests to me. Another thing that people can do, there's a site called preferredtravelhelpers.com where you can actually hire someone if you need some help, assistance along the way, whether it's medical or just if you have a disability that makes it difficult to get around by yourself but you'd still like to travel. You can actually hire someone who is trained and checked out at preferredtravelhelpers.com. And the same thing goes if you'd like to travel and get paid to do it. There are several people out there who would like to do this, but they have a hard time finding a trustworthy person who can do it. They have the money to pay someone to help them. They just don't have the ability to go on their own.
Sounds good. What about taking a volunteer vacation? Is that a good way to go?
Yeah, I think it's a great way for the person in the right frame of mind. Not only do you get to actually do something and have a very memorable experience, but often those volunteer vacations are quite a bit cheaper than an actual vacation, and the expenses that you do incur may actually be tax deductible. You can check these out at idealist.org, globalvolunteers.org, and VAOPS.com. Now, it will give you all kinds of different opportunities all around the world that you can pick and choose from for your volunteer vacation.
And I understand you have a recommendation for one of the best ways to see the world hassle-free. What is that?
This is the way I am going to spend my travel dollars, especially when I retire: river cruises.
Really?
Yes, and a lot of people who kind of are, you know, shy away from cruises, like they don't like the, you know, the Jamaican, Caribbean, the Disney cruise, whatever. This is a different story. You board at one point, and usually overseas, and then you travel overnight, and if it's a river cruise, it's typically not going to be a lot of seasickness or choppy waters, and then you wake up the next day, and you're in an interesting port or city, and you disembark, and you get off, and you go all around, and then you get back on, and you are right back in your room. And the nice thing about touring that way is, of course, you don't have to pack and unpack. And because many older, more historical regions, especially overseas, were based on the river in the first place, lots of times those are the more interesting locations anyway, rather than having to pack up a car, drive around in an unfamiliar area, unpack at the hotel or the bed and breakfast or whatever, and then repack again, can be a wonderful way to see lots of different places with very little hassle. Viking River Cruises is one of the leader, but Uniworld.com and GC.com also offer some really great packages as well.
I'm going to try that. I've never done one of those before.
I'll tell you this. I work with a lot of recently retired couples, and not to stereotype, but very often the woman wants to go see the world. And the guy's like, you know what, we have a TV, it has 300 channels here that we're paying for, we can see everything we want to right here. I have several of these kind of crabby guys come back and say, no, we went on the river cruise and I actually really enjoyed it. And so sometimes that can be a good compromise if you're traveling with a partner and one of you is a little more adventurous than the other.
Sounds good. Linda emails, I have never regretted any money I have spent on travel, and most often do it by tent camping and eating out of the cooler instead of staying at expensive hotels and restaurants. The most costly part of this type of trip is the gas. When that cost is shared with a friend, it is certainly affordable. Have also traveled to Europe and Central America, either staying with friends or in small places where locals stay, and eating like the locals, which also certainly saves money and gives a much better experience of the culture. I would much rather spend my discretionary money on travel than on things. I'm with her, I think.
Yeah, I wish I were more like Linda. I think I'm more likely to sit there and go over if I want the 42-inch screen or the 50-inch screen for the TV, but Linda sounds like she's on a higher plane than I am.
Claudia emails, I was wondering if Kevin has any thoughts on sites like Care.com or Sitter City for hiring people for things like babysitting, pet care, and odd jobs. I feel like they might be better bets than Craigslist. And that would certainly go with the focus of the show if you wanted to get a pet sitter.
Absolutely, and that's one of the other big issues for that, too. And I like that idea, especially if it's someone who's been checked out. A lot of websites are finally realizing that you can have an initial business with just listing different service providers like Craigslist, but after a while, the experience tends to wane and people get disappointed with it, and so now many more sites are actually checking these people out. So if you can find someone who is verified, does have a background check, and that can be much more helpful than just trying to do it on your own, especially something as intimate as caring for your home or your pet or your children.
Well, let's see. We have time for a few more calls from listeners. Cassidy in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Cassidy.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I don't know if there's a travel question, although the money we save might go to travel.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Well, my wife, about 5 years ago, her mom died, unfortunately, and she had transferred an IRA, an IRA into her name, and the rest of everything went to her dad, but she had forgotten about this. And then my wife tried to get it put in her dad's name when this happened, and didn't really get anywhere, and now we're 5 years later, and she didn't do anything with it. And we're sort of, I mean, it's nice that we have this, but at the same time, we have to figure out what do we do with it.
Sure. So has she been taking any money out of the...
No.
Okay.
She hasn't even, like, gotten in touch with them, and so it's just been sitting there, and I know she can, like, take a big lump sum, but then I don't know what the other options are.
And actually, it could be a potential problem. I would definitely call the providers. Is it like an investment firm or a bank?
Yeah, and the balance is kind of sizable. I mean, it's almost like a year's worth of salary.
Okay. I would definitely get in touch with them, and sooner rather than later, in part because there may be, you said it is an IRA, correct?
Yeah, it was an IRA. It was like, and it's changed hands a number of times, so who she originally had it with and it's now a different company, but I mean, it's the same.
Okay. The reason I say to check with them is oftentimes on inherited IRAs, there are required minimum distributions that the beneficiary is required to take out every single year, and it depends on some logistics of the ages of the people involved. But definitely contact that company today if you can and say, look, we want to check on this and see where there are required minimum distributions we were supposed to be taking and we weren't taking. And if that's the case, you not only have to take it out, you have to pay taxes on it, but if the IRS finds out that there was an IRA that you were supposed to be tapping and they say, hey, you should have taken that, the penalty can be high. It can be a 50% excise tax on whatever amount you were supposed to be taking out and weren't taking out. So in other words, if you were supposed to take, say, $2,000 out in a given year as a required minimum distribution, the IRS can go back and say, okay, take that out, pay taxes on it, and then we're going to hit you with another $1,000 penalty because you didn't take the $2,000 out. So I definitely would want you to get on the stick with that, and then in terms of what to do with it afterwards, figure out what's going to be left over. And, you know, you can roll those over to whatever financial institution you want, or if you want to do it yourself at a Vanguard or a Schwab or a Fidelity or something. But I'm much more concerned about the RMDs and if there were some that were supposed to be taken.
All right. Cassidy, thanks for the call. Kathy in Madison is with us now. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. Hi, Kevin. Our son earned enough scholarship money to cover all of this year's tuition.
Great.
And he didn't have, yeah, so that was lovely. He didn't have income from any other sources, and now I'm wondering if we need to file a tax return for him for 2013.
I'll tell you what, before I answer you, let me ask you this, because every other parent is asking, how did he earn enough scholarship money to pay for
all
of his tuition?
There is a certain element of luck, I'm sure. We got the best piece of advice from his high school guidance counselors. Mm-hmm. They said, put in for every small scholarship that you can. People tend to ignore the ones that are like $250, $500. But if you get that scholarship, if it took you an hour to do all of the application process, you've just earned $500 an hour.
That's correct.
And so a lot of that.
Okay, good. And how did he research those scholarships?
There were resources in the guidance office. They actually maintained a continually updated list online.
Mm-hmm.
We followed there's an education column that appears in the Monday edition of the State Journal,
mm-hmm.
and they frequently mention scholarships, and we found several of the smaller ones there.
Right. It's not just as simple as asking for it. You do have to have some, you know, unique and special attributes. But it's not as difficult as people might imagine. I had a very good luck with a family I work with who the son did exactly what your son did, and he said, I'm spending every Sunday applying on it. I would tell people go to fastweb.com. Technically, the scholarship is taxed if it covers room and board or travel and equipment. But check with each provider, and generally they will be tax-free if they're more general offers, but check with each provider and they'll tell you whether or not it is.
All right. Good luck, Kathy, and congratulations. So Kevin, time for the website of the week.
It's the highest rated and most visited travel website in America, tripadvisor.com, and we'll have that website up at our website on yourmoney.com later on today.
Well, this has been a fun show. Four more words before we go.
Spend less. Have more.
Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, with us just about every week at this time with information and advice on your money. Sounds like we'll talk some about gratitude on the next edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.